Blog Talk Radio.
It's gonna be some stuff you're gonna see that's gonna make it hard to smile in the future. But through whatever you see, through all the rain and the pain, you gotta keep your sense of humor. You gotta be able to smile through all this bullshit.
I'm going to get a little up close and personal. I'm hoping that some of our listeners will want to call in. I haven't really booked anyone for tonight except for Miss Dahlia, and she'll be on around 7:30-ish. Some other people I have invited on, I don't know whether they're coming or not. But I have to feel that at some point you have to do a little more than smile. You see, that was Tupac. He was talking about crack sales. He was talking about how you have to take what you have and sometimes make the best of it. Now, Tupac, And for a while, we could use Curtis 50 Cent. I can use Jay-Z as products of their environment. And by that, I mean is being able to use your ingenuity. And by whatever means necessary to better your situation. But it doesn't always mean that because you have achieved a certain financial status, that now you have to abandon those people that you grew up with. Or does it? Would Jay-Z have married Beyonce if he still lived in Brooklyn or Bed-Stuy or suppose he lived in Camden? Would Dre and Snoop Dogg be able to be the role models that they were had they not come up through the neighborhoods that they came? Would they have been more lackadaisical? Would they have been less generated to better than circumstance. And the reason why I say that is because we had a meeting earlier today, a Zoom meeting, and I was talking with two mothers and one gentleman around my age. And the thing that struck me most was that these mothers, it just so happened that both of them sent their kid to the same school. And things that they were discussing about some of the kids there took me back to some of the discussions that we had around the fire when we got back at camp, you know, probably smoking some good tie stick or whatever, you know, we indulged in the stoners, the smokers. And we would talk about things back here in the United States. We talk about, you know, I mean, because, you know, I mean, you have to understand how things worked out in Vietnam, because there were actually two wars as far as race was concerned. And I would say that was before 1971, after 1971. Actually, let's say 1970. Because Tet was 69. February 4th, 1969, Way City. I can tell you stories. Anyway, most of us prior to 1970, were RA, which meant regular Army. And we weren't drafted. That means we were in for the complete whole 6 years, the whole nine yards. We had to do that 4 years and then and 2 years and then change of reserve duty. The guys after 1970 were mostly draftees, and they were there to do their 2 years and go home. That was it. And it left a vacuum, because in 1970, you started seeing the division. First, it was regular Army against U.S. If you had a U.S. in front of your number, then that meant you were a draftee. Okay. Then it became North against South. Then it became white against black. Funny how that came about. Because like I said, first it was North against South, then it became white against black. So let's start back there. When we went to Vietnam, most of our officers were white. Most of our NCOs were the same color we were, brown. And looking at that, this is the military, so, you know, I mean, it's kind of understood that, you know, not that many black guys that are qualified to go to officers' candidate school. So, okay, at least that's what we, you know, that's what we were told. And that's, you know, but the NCO Academy, yeah, you know, you can be there. You can be there with the troops and you can mold and so forth and so on. But you need, but the guy that's above you doesn't look the same as you. Now, we didn't really care because we wanted someone that we had confidence in to bring us back home. And that bullshit about him being white or black or you know, it could have been one of those little skinny mountain yards. It could have been, in instances that I remember, it could have been a 12-year-old kid, okay? But you've had that confidence that you can get in, do whatever you had to do, and it did not matter, okay? But once you began to see color, things changed. That camaraderie was no longer there. You know, you have to trust the guy that's sleeping in the foxhole with you. It's kind of like, you know, if you're married, it's kind of like sleeping next to your wife. There has to be an unbreakable bond there. There has to be that thing there that when the shit comes down, he's not going to jump up and run away. Okay. So anyway, I'll try to give you the my thing on racism here and how we get to this point. Okay. When I come home, racism is embedded in a system, but you give me hope, okay? Okay, I can vote now. I can go to college now. As a matter of fact, you're going to set aside so many slots for me to do that now. You know, you'll have nothing to worry about. We'll welcome you home and your life will be peaches and cream, okay? Well, a lot of people. Oh, I have a caller here. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Mr. Boxer?
Yeah, we're not quite boxing tonight, but I'm doing well. Glad that you called into the show tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. But I was going to comment on your topic. Are you playing Russian roulette? And I guess your topic is centered around whether or not schools should reopen.
Sure.
And my opinion on that is that districts could do what they want because the district really is made up of the people's decision. But I also believe that it's up to the parents in other environments. You know, I'm a strong proponent of school choice with vouchers where parents can put their child where they want to.
I do remember that.
Yes, and I think that it's up to parents to decide what's best for their children. You know, back in, I guess you can call it the day, before there was vaccines, parents used to have what was called POX, P-O-X parties. Some people call them measles parties, depending on what the calamity was. And one child in the neighborhood would have the measles, and all the parents would bring their children over and let them play and have a party with each other. The logic was that all the children would acquire the disease or the syndrome and go ahead and hurry up and get over with it. And thus start building up their own natural immunity. And really the same thing could apply to this virus because the human genome has been exposed to over 324 trillion estimate viruses. And, you know, they do what the human body does.
I don't recall any tuberculosis parties.
Well, tuberculosis is different. Tuberculosis is different.
Well, at that particular time, it was killing people. Just like, I mean, we have right now we have more casualties from this virus than we have from three wars combined. Right now.
Well, you know, you're right to say that the cases are spiking, whereas the deaths from what the case is running pretty much a flat line. But you also have to recognize too that individuals today have a lot more underlying issues as far as their health is concerned than people did back then. You know, I hear people saying, we never heard of people having all these diseases, high blood pressure and diabetes and, you know, the run of the mill. And of course we have access to foods, drinks, and a lifestyle that affords one to be comfortable. You got microwave ovens and you go to the store. Actually, a grocery store is your freezer because you only take what you need and leave the rest there for them to keep and make sure that it doesn't spoil. So we're living in different times today in the beginning of the show.
But I can always recall, my great-grandmother had a stroke. My grandmother had a stroke. Some of these things have been running rampant in the black community, especially for years. I mean, you know, think about, you know, the things that we like to eat now. At least I do. You know, I still like my collard greens and cornbread. I know I can't eat it every day. You know, I still want, you know, them mashed potatoes swimming in gravy and my macaroni and cheese. I mean, you know, these were things that, these were staples back in our day, you know. But now we know that, our body can't take all that. But the thing that our grandparents thought that we were special. You know, the children in the family were the future.
Absolutely. When it come time to be served, they let the children go first, remember?
Right. But so, you know, not only does it seem that, you know, that we don't hold our kids in the same esteem, but it also seems that we have went upon a different pathway when, I mean, you know, I'm sure you remember the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child. Yeah.
Well, a complete village.
So, I mean, you know, you tell me, you know, that you know, especially in you know, the lower income communities. You know, if someone, you know, the first thing that comes out of somebody's mouth is, you know, well, you know, either if you can raise him better, then you take care of him, or, you know, the, hey, you know, I got to go to work. I can't raise him and feed him at the same time.
Well, you're right. But it takes a functional village to raise a child. That's where you had back then. You had for real grandparents, not no 35-year-olds. And things have changed. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to say this. There's a lot of African-Americans that's doing great. They're raising families. The children are well-respected, well-mannered. They do well in school. So I don't want anyone to say we having a conversation speaking on everyone that's in this ethnic group. But there's too many that are not. And that's what I'm sure that you are concentrating on, and I'm concentrating on too. And it's easy to identify the problems. You know, when you have a single family home, that there's a great big problem. Then when you have children, too many, that's not getting well, not being well educated. They're not taking on the hard majors that pay the high demanding in wages and salary. So what's complained about as far as lack of education, disparity in income and also wealth, there's reasons for that. And you see a lot of people have understood, recognized, and came up with solutions and are applying those solutions and not affected by like a large number of the population is. And when you have someone that's doing fine, well, you have to try to copy what they're doing. It works for them. Or try to apply it as much as you can to your own life. And I don't see there's much of this going on.
But you know, you also have to be aware of your surroundings as a parent. Like you said, I mean, you know, if you see that so-and-so is doing well in school or, you know, maybe he's taking something that, you know, he's excelling in that math and things of that nature, and you have a child that is undereducated, instead of you trying, usually instead of trying to assimilate, you find it much easier to ridicule. Oh, they're an Uncle Tom, or they're this, or they're that. But do we need to actually, and I know I'm guilty of this, Naj is guilty of this, especially when we usually have conversations with you. We kind of look toward that, you know, that silver spoon. And what I'm wondering is, a lot of times, do we resent that silver spoon so much that we fail to see that it might be better for a collaboration rather than drawing lines in the sand?
Well, you're absolutely right. There is a resentment, but when people who have the silver spoon come back and try to show people who have the tin spoon, then you have those vanguards, those watchdogs that chase you away. And the reason they do is because they make money off of those tin spoon individuals. And I see it. I have seen it, witnessed it, experienced it. And you see elements of it right now. There's no reason for – there's reasons, but it's been taken as a norm for so many young people that's failed in these inner city and urban settings. And some people seemingly seem like they take it as the norm. That's what's expected. And I've seen that on grades too. Where they used to grade, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90. Then they went to a system of expected and better than expected. So if you had 4 out of 10 that was doing satisfactory work, they was graded better than expected. Well, if that's 40% is better than expected, what was, I mean, really terrible? And I watched that. So I come to the conclusion that you can't take no one thing and apply it to all, especially in the political and social conditions and the way things are ran. But I always say that all children don't come from dysfunctional families. And I'm not blaming the child. What I'm doing when I say that is that you have parents who go the extra step and out of their way and sacrifice, whereas their child can gain as much as they can in education. And then because of the disadvantage that they are in, as far as income is concerned, they can't put their child anyplace else. And where their child is, really, they don't belong there, because it's nothing more than like putting a chain, a heavy weight around their neck. You involved in sports. We see in football combines and basketball camps. We see them bring out 100 children and measure them on how far they can throw, run, and how high they can jump. And at the end of the session, maybe 10 or 20 is chosen. The other ones are told to go and work harder and come back next year. Well, if you can use that type of elimination, or really what you're doing, you're testing those children for where they are, well, couldn't you not do the same thing when it comes to education? Should you not be measuring young people and seeing what their inner and inept ability is, and then start drilling them and exposing them to be skillful in what that ability can lead them into? It could lead them into aviation. It could lead them into chemical engineering, agriculture. And then, too, you have to – children have to do – just like Kobe Bryant, when he used to practice basketball, he used to do 800 free throws every session. Well, why can't we don't have young people doing 100 math problems every night based on their grade and work their way on up? 200 math problems. If you let them go out there at the basketball and shoot baskets to, in order to perfect their skills, should they not be doing the same thing on the academic platform too?
But
you
isn't
know that
this, but isn't this, see, you know, I mean, I'm agreeing with everything that you said, but see, I'm also thinking that, you know, these are the things that were said by Martin Luther King. These are the things that were said by Huey Newton. This was said by who was the leader of SNCC, Stokely Carmichael. The thing is, you know, we've been saying these things to our kids. You know, you can do this, you can do that. Shouldn't we do this? You know, now you can go to college. Now you can do this. You know, back in my day, we couldn't. I mean, isn't there a time? It's been 174 years since the Civil War has ended. I'm kind of tired of blaming, you know, 174 years of our not surviving. No, are not thriving. We have survived. But how do we get this mentality? Are we teaching this to our kids? It's all right for you to survive, not thrive?
Well, I think so in many cases. You listen to the commentary from a lot of organizations, that's what they talk about. We struggle, we're surviving. All this takes an assertive plan and effort. Just the way the Indians done back in the late 40s when they created all those IT schools, Indian technology schools. And you know, funny thing about it, they went around to different provinces within the country and carried children through drill to see who would be good for this, who would be good for that. I done the same thing because I came up in a trade high school. We had to be tracked into that high school. You had track one, which was for liberal arts. Track two was at trade high school. And in it, that was everything. Aero mechanics, auto mechanics, pre-engineer, pre-medical, bake shop, cosmetology, heating and cooling, sheet metal. They had everything in there. You don't have that no more. Not free, you got to pay for it when you get out of high school. So it's very simple to look at what we're going to be demanding in the next 20 years, or even shorter in an elementary school setting. And then you look at what percentage of that do you want to control as an ethnic group. And we can't say that others don't do that, because when you look at Asians in Manhattan, they have taken control of the garment industry. You look at the other Asians, I'm sorry, those in the Middle East, how they control much of your gas food marks. That was an assertive effort to do that. And they're trying to get into other things, energy, controlling your ports. Those are concerted efforts. So you have to do the same thing if you are in an ethnic group. I would say if you want to be able to fully employ your people, your people in that group. Well, if not, then it could be done with people with like minds, like agenda, sit around a table, form a cartel, and say, we're going to do this. So like Don King done in boxing for a while. You know how boxing used to be. He came on the scene, took a piece of the pie.
Took a piece. Don King sold 110% of a boxer. He didn't take a piece.
Well, you know more than I do.
But like I said, it seems like we've been preaching forever. We've been talking, but we haven't come up with any solutions. We've been given a few crumbs, but at some point you have to, you can refer back to, even the Muslims, and I'm talking about Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X at that particular time. Everyone knows that you need to unite and that we need to do better, but where are the people that are leading us today? I mean, there's no Martin Luther King, there's no, as I mentioned before, Stokely Carmichael, no Abernathys. Where does our community look for its guidance, or as you said, someone that's the head of that village?
Well, it starts with your home. You got to have a solid home. That's where leadership is first recognized and respected, is in your home. And parents that's astute enough to know what their children need to be learning and the direction in which they should be going. Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam was the largest employer of blacks in the United States. I don't know if you knew that during that time in the 50s. But his membership was what, 250,000? It wasn't all of black population. You don't need that. You just need to do what you lay out to do, set out to do, and do it well. And it would be multiplied. People in other areas may have somebody in lumber, may have somebody in biotech. Look at all the opportunity that's opening up underneath all these riots and stuff. Nobody's ready. The things that I see that's coming down, taking pictures off of pancake mix boxes and singing songs, that ain't no daggone plan. And you know the funny thing about that? Them kids, those young people that's out there protesting and rioting and looting, they never will be competition to your kids or my kids. Because when you get to that point where you realize there's something wrong, where you got to resort to that, well, you're in big trouble. And I'm going to tell you another thing, too. I ain't never in my life seen this many dumb white people, neither. I ain't never seen this many dumb white folks. You got them out there doing that, too. You know there's something wrong. So if things are at the level where you can recognize them as being, this is the time you need to start moving your young people. Because they ain't got to repeat. They not gonna have to. If you put your child through the right programs, the right drills, and properly prepare them for what's in need, they would never have to worry about competing against them, those that's out there in the street. And you've experienced that. Look back in the 60s. Those that was out there burning and marching and hooping and hollering, they didn't reap from that. It was the ones that stayed home. Condoleezza Rice-like families. Those white hippies, when it was over, they shaved, cut their hair, and put the suit and tie on. We know that's what happened. One thing you can do is learn from history. You can't change it. You shouldn't want to change it because what happened then led to you to being here today. No matter what situation you're in, you're here. So you learn from those things. And you know I'm a Donald Trump supporter. Donald Trump is for school choice. He's for telling those that are foreigners working in jobs because you can't find Americans that once we train Americans, you're going to have to go home. And that's the right thing to do. Blacks need to be training their children. 5 or 7% of all engineers are only black, and they make up, what, 13% of the population? Between the ages of 18 and 65, you only got 26 million black. That's women and that's men, women, and children, even those that's incarcerated. You're not talking about that many people. Children under 18, you got about 8 million. People that's over 65, you got about 4.6 million. They're not going to work no more, the ones over 65. And the ones under 18, they should be obtaining education and skills. So the ones that should be making, raising families, and sacrificing for children for the next generation, they're between 18 and 65. 26 million of them. You got to sacrifice. You got to sacrifice so that your child can have access to and better understanding to the things that you were not able to do. You should recognize that. The kids out there in the street that's looting, they recognize that. They recognize the problem and trouble that they're in. And they don't, you know, the people that make out from that is, look at Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, they raised a finger. But he would profit handsomely off of all this looting. Why is that?
Michael says Republicans buy shoes, too.
Well, let me tell you. See, the looters are going into those sports shops and other apparel places and taking stuff that he's endorsing, Nike and other things. So the stores had already ordered what should carry them through to the winter. Now they got to reorder it all over again, being paid off by insurance. So Michael will profit twice as much as he normally would.
But you know, I want to get back to, you know, when you're saying, you know, we have to make sure that our children are educated and that they have access to, well, you know, these are the same words that I was saying, you know, to my baby mama. You know, I want to make sure that he's afforded the school, he's afforded this. And then, let's see, first the high school shuts down because supposedly there's no money. Then the elementary school shuts down, and the kids, now we got yellow buses, you know, long yellow ones and little yellow ones coming through the neighborhood. And, you know, like I'm saying, I mean, I have my great grandkids now looking at me, and, you know, they're saying, well, to me, their eyes are saying, what are we going to do when we grow up, Grandpa? And I really don't have an answer for them, because I've told all of these stories to their fathers or their mothers.
Well, the thing, you must live in an awful small town for all those things to be happening.
The town, if you look at Youngstown now, I think when I lived there, it was a little over 500,000 people. Now there's probably less than 105,000. Well, I don't live there, but my family's still there. So, I mean,
Youngstown, the mills in there are closed. My grandfather grew up in Youngstown. But the thing that you have to do, and I say provide them with the exposure and the resources. You got much resources that's free. Libraries, museums, your universities have lectures. If people wanted to put something together, let's say aviation, for instance, where you start teaching young people early, maybe say the fifth grade, avionics and aviation with simulators and so forth. Those things are available. They're not expensive. Even in many cases, manufacturers like Boeing or Lockheed or Northrop Grumman will provide you with some assistance in providing those young people with the technology that they need, where they can start learning that these companies are going to need people for in the future. Those things out there. But people have to be able to have a foresight and provide that for the young people. There's many cases of that. Out there in Oakland, a guy by the name of Matthew Graves, he was an orphan. I think his mother might have left him at the firehouse. And he created Oakland Youth First. And that's what he does. He teaches, give young people the opportunity to have hands-on experience with aviation through flight simulators, and also with marine craft, being able to pilot a boat. So that's what his idea was, and that's what he put together. And there's many other instances where people are doing the same thing. So there's no shortage in the desire to have great people in order to go to work for you. I'll give you another area, drones. That's going to be a big industry, not only in just the flying them, but the support programs that go along with them. Apps where you can see whether or not you can fly here, what altitude that you can be at. Look at X10, Elon Musk, and his what he's doing with SpaceX. And when that rocket delivers that payload and pushes it on into orbit, and it comes back down and lands right on the same pad it took off from, that there is some high-level technology that you can find in drones.
But didn't we talk about these breakthroughs, you know, when we were having astronauts on the moon, and, you know, and then we talked about, you know, well, we can make them come down in the ocean, and we can make them come down within X number of miles of where they're supposed to be, you know, and things like this. But the thing that I'm thinking about is our community. And I'm not just talking about the, you know, the rich side or the poor side. I'm talking about a way for them to meet. For instance, to give you what I think was a good example, my father embraced Martin Luther King. I embraced Huey Newton. But it wasn't so much because we had different beliefs in equality. We had a difference in the methodology by which it was obtained. So how do we, you know, first of all, you know, like if you live in Youngstown, for instance, you might not trust the police as much as somebody in the neighborhood that you live in. So, you know, until you have that, like I said before, until we get out of that survival mentality, how do we learn to thrive? There was always a few people within the tribe or the society that were able to maintain that status. But, you know, how do we get the majority involved? Or is that where we're wrong because the majority is not supposed to be involved? Is there always supposed to be an elite?
Well, unfortunately, that is generally the way it's going to be. Everybody's not going to be on top, but nor should they be on the bottom. And you may mention the police. People out there marching and protesting for things that they already got the power to do now. Missouri Constitution of 1875 reads, "Powers of the people over internal affairs, constitution, and forms of government. That the people of this state have the inherent, sole, and exclusive right to regulate the internal government and police thereof, and to alter and abolish their constitution and form of government whenever they may deem it necessary to their safety and happiness, provided such changes be not repugnant to the Constitution of the United States." So this is just Missouri, but I'm sure it probably exists in other states too. But you already got control of the police. You don't use it. You don't use that power. For some reason or another, people don't use the power that they already have. You have control over your schools. Same laws, state statutes tell you that what goes on in that school as far as education, teaching, books is up to the people. But they let somebody else do it. And that somebody else is usually influenced by others, groups that represent organizations, that represent a group. They're trying to make it easy and make it comfortable and enriching for their people they represent. There's no such thing as quality education. Courts have said that. And they said, what would it be that you know how to read a ballot when you go into the voters' booth? Quality education is what you say it is. You, the parent, the community of the school district. It's what you want your children to be exposed to. All children in the school district don't have to be exposed to the same thing. They don't have to be going in the same direction, because you get back to the same situation with your football combines and your basketball camp. Everybody don't make it shooting free throws, but they have some other skills, and those skills are never tapped. They are not given the same attention that you give that child when you're hoping for them to become another LeBron James. But you seem to forget one thing, and it goes along with what you just got through saying. How many thousands of kids went by the wayside to produce one LeBron James? A whole lot of them, because he had to have competition as he was coming up and developing. He had to have excellent competition. But when it came down, that final cut, the others weren't there, and he was. So to answer your question, that's the way it's going to be. The thing is that, like I just gave the example, them kids that's out there protesting and that, you want to teach your young people the other direction. Your children will never have to compete with those out there. They never will. What are they going to do? And many of them don't even know why they're out there themselves. And if they had something to do, they wouldn't have time to be out there. That is the reality.
Isn't that the same thing that grandmothers and grandfathers were telling their kids during the Civil Rights Act? You know, shouldn't y'all be finding somewhere else to do? Why don't you go to school? I mean, like I said, I mean, it seems to me I've heard all of these arguments, but I haven't had a person sit down and tell me, well, look, this is what we're going to do. Not what we should do, but this is what we're going to do. And I've even had people on my show that were in their 20s and some in their early 20s, some in their late 20s. And the excuse that I was given then was, well, you never showed us how, or you never taught us, or where were we supposed to learn that? And I said the same thing. You did. Well, what about your local library? Well, the library is closed. Well, what about, you going online? Well, I can only go online when I'm in school. Everybody seems to come up with excuses. And I'm wondering, like I said, you were, it seems like, from our conversations, you were very active in your children's lives. And in the lives of those around you in your community. Well, how do you make those, make the others, instead of being envious, being, like, hey, this is, I aspire to be like you, not hey, well, when you go home, you got this. When I go home, I got that. You got a 64-inch TV, and all I got is a 24-inch TV. How do we get out of that mentality?
Well, like I said before, that's the parent's responsibility. A parent is supposed to establish authority. The child respects that authority because the parent is giving them attention. The parent's supposed to lead these children in what the parent have already researched and done their due diligence. They're supposed to lead them into these areas. I told my grandson he's going to be an engineer. I told him he's going to be...
When I was talking to the two mothers today, and their kids happened to go to the same high school, they were talking about these two kids one of the parents knew, and they were talking about how this kid had put up he wished that the days of slavery were around now. This is all that, blacks are good for is to serve whites. And the first thing that I asked was, well, this kid is 12 years old. He's going to be a senior this year. Did he just pick this up in a book? I mean, you know, was this by his peers? And like you say, where my question was also, you know, if this kid is that old, then he's been indoctrinated in that type of thing for quite some time. And I think that before you can chastise the kid, you have to talk to the parents, because he's going back home to that environment every day from somewhere. It's somewhere that his parents have condoned. If they haven't condoned it themselves, that they've let him around that environment. And you cannot tell
right.
me.
You
know, so
you are absolutely
I mean,
right.
So, you know, if when you go back to the parents, you know, I mean, are we really setting an example anymore? You know, like you said, you set goals for your grandson, and because he respected you, you know, or I would like to think at least part of that was because of the respect that he had for you, to, you know, he did not want to disappoint his grandfather. So, you know, I'm sure that had a lot to do with his current success or however he grew up. And that's what I'm saying. Have our kids lost respect for us, or have we lost respect for the institution of parenthood?
Well, they taught to disrespect their parents. See, you cannot let anyone teach your children. You can't do that. You shouldn't let anybody just date your daughter either. It's the same thing. You can't turn your child off to just anyone. Would you like for your child to be taught by a cross dresser? What do they call them? Transvestites? Is dressed like that in front of the classroom? It wouldn't teach mine. So you got teachers and professors have developed these ideologies based on some likelihood of what some group wants the future look of the nation, and they're running that down through your child. You have to ask yourself, where in the world did a child get the idea, the notion that they wish that was back during those times? It has to be taught. It's talked about. You hear it all day long on the news, talking the same old stuff. I like to call it stuff. Bringing up slavery, bringing up all sorts of things. You got this idea out there that the United States was imperialistic and bad and all those things. That is the wrong thing to be teaching young people. Young people should, at some point in time in their life, get to a point where they can make an analysis of them by themselves. So you can't be teaching bias. You can't do that. So when your teacher is sitting standing in front of that child, is propagating those things, those child catch up on that. They want to blame whatever ineptitude that they have on something else. And then too, the parent should be setting the bar and the direction. Just like if I wanted my child to be a sports medicine in boxing, I would bring them to you. I wouldn't take him to Richard Pryor if he was still living. I would take him to you. You would be the teacher standing in front of the classroom. Not somebody who has a general understanding of many things and mastering of none. That's very dangerous for your child. You cannot turn your child loose with just anyone.
So, do you think that it goes back to our education system? Do you think it goes back to, I mean, you know, how do we, I mean, you know, or how do we Let's say, okay, you mentioned trade schools, okay? Some kids, hey, well, maybe he can't succeed in academics, so, we find somewhere another niche for him. Our teachers were usually specialized. My history teacher didn't teach me algebra. My basketball coach, he might have taught physical education, but very seldom was he a math teacher. He might have been social studies or civics, something like that. But I say that to get back to who teaches your kids. We had a certain amount of respect for our teachers. We knew that when we got in the classroom, and the bell rang, certain things were expected of you. Nowadays, the bell rings, kids still out there, he might be putting out a cigarette, might be smoking a blunt. Might be just sitting out there doing not a damn thing. But what I'm saying is, we had a certain amount of respect and fear for our elders. Do we have to have that fear factor now? Because we've already lost the respect. So what do we turn to?
Well, as I said before, you have to take control. Parents need this option. I think this last option is school choice with vouchers. And I think that will allow those parents that's in the system who have the qualities of what we're talking about, saying it's missing, it's there. And you would take out another certain percentage of the population of children and put them on the right path. But unfortunately, you're always going to have those who just don't make it. I don't know what to tell you.
Already kind of established, that we're on different ends of the spectrum when it comes to politics. But when it comes to the job market, when it comes to when you look at what's happening because of this pandemic, do you think that when it comes out on the other end of this, it seems to me that most of these minor jobs that we have, I'm looking at the way, the different fast food markets have now got more machines to do things. You're much more, automated. So even those services, it seems like the job market is shrinking. So when you start talking about the elite job market, and I know you work with the Society of Engineers, I believe you told me at one time, or you were talking about how many scholarships they were giving out. Do you think that these type of jobs are going to suffer because of this pandemic?
Most certainly. This pandemic has become political. It's going to come and go. Companies still going to need to have excellent people. You just got to get your children ready. And out of working for somebody in a particular industry, you learn that industry. And maybe, more often than not, some person may want to come out and be their own owner of a business operating in that industry, now becoming a competitor of those that you worked for. That's the way it happens. There's going to be need for new food systems, transportation, medicines, energy sources, application of energy sources. All those things are going to continue to be needed. The space defense and even the exploration of Mars is going to open up new industries and have a yearn for new technologies. Prepare your children. Let them have the opportunity to be able to utilize the innovation that they have in their minds. When they can hold it in their hand, manipulate it, and watch it work as it was designed to. That turns on the innovative mind process, and they can take it to yet another and another and another level. The human mind never is satisfied where it is. It always has a yearning to be better. That's why we've advanced so far as we had in this country. Look how far we've come in aviation alone from the 1930s. Who would ever have thought? Look at the miniaturization that came out of space programs. Whereas now you got cell phones and a wristwatch. When back then, a walkie-talkie was big as a brick.
I remember those big old cell phones. But here's the thing. You know, once again, we've been able to make all of these marvelous steps in technology and space exploration and energy and all the almost every field that you can think about, except for race relations.
You don't have to worry about no race relation. No, that's nothing but a compound. People have been talking that stuff forever. I don't worry about no race relation.
Yeah. Okay.
If you got it, they people will seek it out from you, don't they? Blacks make up, 70% of the NBA, and I don't know what percentage. So, like, people that want to see athletics, they come. So, no, I don't worry about race relations. All you want to do is for people to respect your civil rights. Whether a person loves you or not, you can't make people love you. And I wouldn't even worry about that. And then again, you have a hard time talking about race relations when you look at a place like Chicago, where since Memorial Day weekend, you had 739 shootings and 139 deaths in 47 days. Your chances of getting shot in Chicago is greater than your chances of winning the Illinois lottery. It's just that bad. Is that not relations of some sort? Apparently it's not working. It's bad relations to produce those type of numbers. And no police shootings, by the way.
I totally agree with you on that. And I totally agree that when you look at the numbers, but once again, I have to point to circumstances and those particular people that are doing that. That's a small percentage of the people that feel that they need to get out of the neighborhood. That's a very small percentage of the people that actually live in that neighborhood when you come to think about it. And you have to remember, I believe when you mentioned that about, and which makes it even worse, I believe at least 7 of those deaths were people under the age of 15.
The one as young as 18 months.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think the oldest one was a boy 15 years old. That's why I ask, are we playing Russian roulette with our kids? Because we're trying, or we are raising our kids in those type of environments. And a lot of it, a lot of it is because I think we have lost, or at least...
Well, you know what?
But
I have to agree with you. You are playing Russian roulette with your child. Because every time your child go outside, you never know. You don't have to go outside. You can just be in the living room practicing your ballet. And a bullet come through the wall or come through the window. You never know. So every time that you let your child do something that any other society would consider as normal, in the environment that you're in, you never know what's going in. So with that, you're absolutely right. It is Russian roulette. One time nothing may happen. Two times nothing may happen. But somewhere after that, something may happen. And it may be for the worse. I'm going to have to get out of here, man.
All right, well, I was glad to talk with you tonight. We didn't have any raising of voices and gnashing of teeth. Hey, it was good talking with you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, take care of yourself. Be safe.
Thank you. That was an old antagonist of ours, Mr. Pianke. But tonight we had a very good conversation. As I said, I was glad. There was actually raising of voices, and we talked as two gentlemen should. I would like to have that relation with a lot of the people that come across this podcast and some of the other podcasts that I visit and associate myself with. Getting back to the original conversation here, I agree that we have made I don't want to say strides. I'm going to call them baby steps, just like I say crumbs. Because tomorrow it'll be no chokeholds, or I believe there's another movement out here, eight can't wait, or something like that. And what I'm afraid is we're going to take these reforms, or and we're going to use them, and once again everything is going to be great. We're going to pave this over, and everything, all of the animus and animosity that's been fanned by 45 is going to be over with. After four years, we're going to vote him out, and everything is going to be fixed. Well, I have to ask, in 2012, where were these people? Most of them were living in the same homes that they're living in now. Most of them were voting the same way they vote now, and most of them have not all of a sudden changed their way of thinking. If you vote for Joe Biden, does that mean that if Joe Biden loses, that you're no longer going to be a Democrat? Which means that you still expound those Democratic platforms and virtues, and you embrace the Democratic values of our country. If you vote for a racist Republican, and you know that he's racist, I'm not talking about someone that you know hasn't shown you that he's racist. I mean, he's been convicted of racism in a New York court. So if you vote for a known racist twice, how am I supposed to view your values? We can have a drink together, we can play cards together, but we can't discuss politics together. When you and I talk, am I paranoid because I think that you think that you're better than me? Or if I know you're a Trump supporter, do I still respect you the way I did before? You see, in sports, you keep score. And I'm going to tell you, as one that has spent a whole lot of my life, trying to keep score is very tedious. It's not productive. I can make 10 excuses on why I'm not comfortably retired. There's only one truth, and I know that. There's only one truth. I don't care how I cut it up, how many excuses I make. I was born here. My father didn't buy me a car for graduate. I can make all the excuses that I want, but there's only one truth. I know that. I face that. Okay? So, why can't this be the virtue that we teach our children? There's only one truth. We're all human beings. You cut us all, we all bleed red. When we die, we all bleed blue because our blood has no oxygen. Blue, black, whatever you want to call it, but anyway, the point being is that basically, we all go to the same place. We're going to be put somewhere where, you know, our families come and, you know, talk about the lives that we've led and, you know, sing sad songs and spread lies. Sing sad songs, throw some flowers on you, or some, however your particular religion or creed, you know, honors its dead. And another truth is, we're all going to be judged. Or, no, I don't want to say judged. We're all going to be recognized by the color of our skin. As I've said, if you tell me that you don't see color, then how could you possibly see me? I am a man of color. But that doesn't mean that I'm inferior. That doesn't automatically mean that I have two strikes when I go into the plate. I'm very afraid of this mentality that we've given to our kids. I'm very afraid. My parents took a certain amount of pride. You know, when I got a report card, I had to take that report card home to my parents. My parents looked on that report card, and if there was something that they thought that was awry, it didn't matter what the teachers, how the teachers graded me. It was how my parents graded me. If I got a B in arithmetic and they told me, you know, like, hey, well, you know, you got all your homework problems right. How come you couldn't get it on the test? Well, since it doesn't seem that you have enough time to get this, we're going to give you a little extra time. We're going to take, you know, maybe we'll take away your TV privileges. Maybe we'll take away your after-school playtime. But in the next 6 weeks, you will bring that B up to an A. And if you don't, then maybe we'll try something a little more stringent. Hey, that's the way things work. I don't even know if kids get report cards. You know, I mean, does the parent just come down and sign a report card and no exclamation, no nothing? I mean, you know, you have an absence. What do you mean you absent? What day was that? Oh, yeah, okay, you know, because your parents had to write you a note. And if your day's absence didn't match up with the amount of notes, somebody knew it. We didn't need to go to school. I sent you out here to go to school. Where did you go? You was at whose house? And then after they call his mom, to find out, you know, why come we were all hanging out in his house at that particular day, depending on the answer that my mother was given, you might not be able to go and play with him until y'all became 18. And in my mom's case, I meant that literally. Of course, I wasn't there till I was 18. But anyway, if she said 18, she might have really meant 18. And you could be living next door. I don't even want y'all walking to school together. And my mama meant that. She meant that from the bottom of her heart. She didn't want us going to school together. But anyway. Once again, respect meant a lot when I was growing up. And you know, I think not only did Aretha Franklin make the song famous, but she also made it infamous. Because, you know, I mean, hey, a lot of things changed with that song, and you can just take my word for it there. But I'm hoping Delia is able to come on tonight. As I said, she was one of the parents that I was talking about, and she's very active in a lot of circles. A lot of things that are really good for the community. Another thing I was asking her about was the role of the PTA. You know, I'm really thinking here about where and what. Lost out there for a minute. Delia, that's what I saw. Summer D. She is very much involved in her community, in a lot of. Things that are going that are happening in our community, and we were talking about children, and we were talking, I think she said that her son was just going into the 10th grade, which the 10th grade to me was it was very important. That's the first time you really get to start knowing girls, and a lot of peer pressure, all of those different types of things. So it was kind of astonishing to me to find, that there are parents that are actually still involved with their kids' schools. Because I really thought, just like some of these organizations have gone away, some of the after school programs. I always thought, it was because a lot of these parents no longer had the time to wonder or to worry about their kids were doing in school. It was all about, I have to make a choice. Between them eating or taking care of themselves. Them eating or them going to school, or not going to school as the parent. I just thought that it was unusual, because usually we tend to want to take care of things in the home. We don't want to air our dirty laundry, or we don't want to hear the teacher say, little Mikey is a pain in my ass, little Mikey disrupts the class. Everyone wants to think that their child is that classic student, career, whereas I can remember when I got put out of class, for want of a better word, a better phrase, for being disruptive. The teacher called home to ask my mother had I told her. Of course, I had not, which brought upon a whole nother level of punishment. But on top of that, the next day, she actually went to school with me and had a chair beside me. Of course, none of the kids dared say anything while she was there. But you can imagine what I went through afterwards. Something that I never wanted to ever happen again. Now you have three or four mothers that they come to school, they talk to the teacher, and then they all go out and go to Starbucks and have a coffee, and I'll see you in 6 weeks or however long the school term lasts. But anyway, it's very disappointing to me when you tell me that these kids need to go back to school. How do you tell an 8-year-old to keep his mask on? How do you tell a 4-year-old that he has to wear a mask now and him and Jimmy can't hug no more? Little kids show affection. Little kids hug little kids, grab hair. You develop a certain amount of social skills even as young as 4 years old, maybe even younger than that. I'm not a school psychologist, so I just say at a very young age. When you don't give me a plan on how I can open up my school district safely, and safe being the optimum word here, then I have to think that you don't have my best interests at heart, or at least that of my child. We have this one instance, I believe it's in Arizona, who shared a classroom online. Just the three of them. All three of them got the virus, one passed away. After everything a person my age has been through, and I will admit, in a lot of cases, I'm kind of like the president, because I have the mask swinging around my ear, or it'll be tucked under my chin, and unless there's somebody coming by, if I'm more than 6 feet away from the nearest person, I will practice social distancing, or I will put on a mask. But as far as it being that automatic reflex that I put it up, which it should be. If I was still in the Army, it would be part of my dress uniform, and I would have to wear it, and it has to perform properly. You know what I mean? No tears, da da da. So, if we're talking about herd immunity, then usually the ones that are most affected are the very old and the very young. We've seen this virus go from what they call the old people's disease when we first started talking about it back in March. It was affecting older people. You know, the younger people in their 30s and 40s, they were not as susceptible unless they had some underlying conditions. I think we had, what, an 11-year-old pass away? We had an 18-month-old, or was it? Maybe it was even younger. I'm not sure, because we had a very young death out here in California also. But I would really like to hear from some of my listeners tonight. What do you think? You can email me, jeking@gmail.com. You can follow my Facebook pages from the Boone Rat Diaries. We earned our Spurs, and the Chronicles of Whining Donald, from Vietnam to the White House. I also post a lot on veterans, Vietnam veterans against Trump, the idiocy of Donald Trump's America, veterans against Trump, and a lot of other places. But you can find me on Facebook, J.E. King III. Also cover a little sports, and as you heard from Mr. Pianti, I do a little. I cover a little boxing also. I have the heavyweight champion, Mr. Layman Brewster, and boxing's greatest historian, to my mind, Mr. John the Iceman Scully. We talk about boxing on Sundays. I'm with a two-time IBF junior middleweight champion, Canine Bundridge, winner of season two. Participant of season two and the contender. And we chop it up a little bit with a lot of world champions and people that are astute within our world of boxing. From promoters to cut men, never can tell who might stop by the dog pound. It was great talking to everyone tonight. Sorry we weren't able to get Delia on the program tonight. Dahlia, I'm sorry. You can catch me, as I said, J.E. King on Facebook. And you can catch me here usually on Monday nights. Just trying to talk about some of the social issues of the day. Have a great night. Make sure you go to the polls. And please, vote blue. Have a great night. I'll talk to you next week.